VCR, what's your favorite scary movie?
Hello out there in uncensored horror land, all you fanatics of all things freaky. Welcome from our small town childhood trauma to yours, because we are diving deep this week. We're doing something that I didn't expect. I had it in the back of my mind that we would do this one day, but it kind of just moved forward quite rapidly. But before we get started, you will notice a fresh face with us today. Mr. Kenny Legs, say hi to the people at home. How are you?
Hello, folks. Kenny Legs here. Nice Kenny to meet Legs, you.
Mr. Legumes. Now, where have we pulled you from, if you wanted to let the folks know?
Louisiana.
There we go.
Right, born and raised.
So Kenny has come from the universe of the PlayStation Network with myself and Luke to join us for a little exhibition back to the 90s. I will not apologize. I will just say that our proposed Nightmare on Elm Street series has taken just a little bit of a backseat. We were going to jump into Nightmare, but Nightmare's pretty stagnant at the moment. There's no new news. There's no, like, anything happening. And we usually like to keep with the zeitgeist. This property, there is something happening. There is a television series prequel headed our way. So one night
can I just say, Steve, yeah? Just more importantly, when the titles are updated, if Kenny decides to stick around, he would be the perfect Pennywise in that opening.
I object to this. I object to this wholeheartedly. I will leave the show. I'm gone.
Why is that? Too much testosterone?
Yeah. She loves it.
No, I love the testosterone. Gay, straight, whatever. I love testosterone. I am just totally objecting to the Pennywise. And
are
we going to jump right into my childhood trauma? Or are we going to?
We're going to talk about all of our childhood traumas, because this is, my friends, the first part in a four-part series, because this is the only way to digest the amount of stuff that is coming your way. If you haven't already guessed, we are tackling the Clown Prince of Horror in Stephen King's It, but we are starting out with 1990s. Ugh. It. That is so iconic, that picture. I just remember going to the video store and seeing old Pennywise.
You don't even notice the hands.
No, you don't.
It was always the movie that, as a kid, I wanted to rent and was so scared, and it took like a few years to muster up the courage to take it home. And I don't even know if we got through it.
I'm going to go first, because I am old, as we can see, and I have vivid memories of this being on television here in Australia. It aired over two nights because it's a two-night miniseries. Clocks it in just over 3 hours, so that's why we didn't try and tackle it all at once. But I remember there being ads on television, and I remember specific scenes from them being on TV. I didn't get to watch it when it was on TV, all of it, but because I was a little baby child. But I have very vivid memories of this happening. And then, you know, as it filtered down into the schoolyard, and everyone's like, have you seen it? Have you seen it? Oh my God, have you seen it? I was like, yeah, I saw it. And I think, like, anyone who is of the elder millennial/millennial age group definitely had a fear of shower drains for a hot minute.
I think it was more like the stormwater drains is what I was terrified of, because I was already scared I could fall down one, but now there's clowns down there too, so it complicated matters for my young mind.
So, Katie, wait, oh, you guys are probably around the same. Katie, when did you first see this? You would have been a home. This would be a home video thing for you.
Yeah. VHS.
All my family members deny putting this on the TV at grandma's house. But I swear to you, one of my family members put this on during a holiday and I stumbled upon it. And this is where the trauma started. All family members deny this. Every single one. But it happened. And I vividly remember it happening. No one wants to take
responsibility for the product that is Katie today.
No one will take responsibility for this. Not one. No. Not one will take responsibility for it. But I am traumatized by this movie.
What about our new friend, Mr. Legs? When did you first see this?
You may have heard stories of the notorious Cooter Brown, which is my mom, old Cooter. She is not afraid of scary movies and not afraid to show kids what it's like to be scared. And after watching The Exorcist, when I was probably about 5 or 6, this was a walk in the park. No problems at all.
We have very similar horror introductions, Kenny. That's
yeah. Scary. I was scared of getting possessed while I was asleep, but scared of clowns while I was awake. So, terrible childhood. Terrible.
I traumatized a friend after watching The Exorcist. She couldn't sleep in her bedroom for a good 3 months. Nice. So I passed the trauma on for a different movie.
Paying it forward.
I paid it forward. Yes.
Obviously, goes without saying this comes as an adaptation of a massive Stephen King book. Like, when I was a kid, I tried to read. It just gets real deep. and very
it's a bit much for a kid.
Yeah. I read the book in 7th, 8th grade, I think.
Yeah.
I love Stephen King. I mean, I mean, child orgies are a bit much, but.
Yeah. I'm glad we kind of. Like,
the book that focuses more on, like, the effects of trauma.
You were doing good.
I was always an advanced reader, but.
Yeah, I really think it was honestly The Shower. The shower thing again, like anything to do with the shower drains. I don't know why. I was like, nope, close the book, put it in. I still remember I was at my grandmother's house. I used to read in the bath. That was probably it. And I was like, oh, fuck this.
Oh,
in the drawer the you go.
Tornado.
Yeah. I was like, no, tornado. Girl.
I'm not going near it. My toes coming me. Back.
See, yeah, get out of the bath before you pull the plug. I don't want to die that way. I ain't going out that way.
My friends. They don't do it anymore, but they used to like to call me and leave me voice messages. Beep, beep, Katie. Beep, beep. And, you know, now they're going to watch this and they're going to start doing it. And fuck you guys.
Ah, well, that's part of the joy. Okay, so we shall jump into, for want of a better term, the drain that is the dairy drama of 1990s. If you haven't seen this, I don't know what to tell you. It's like 30, nearly 30 something years old.
No, don't go watch it. You don't, no spoilers, just don't fucking watch it. And you know what? I have worn the most appropriate shirt for the occasion. It says, back off, you spooky bitch.
There you go.
That's exactly how I feel about this fucking clown. Okay. That's how I feel about this goddamn clown.
See 90s all-star acting,
yeah,
this is the movie to go to. No, it had such Tim a cast. Curry
was robbed.
We're gonna talk about the cast and everything. Let's just get into the plot a little bit so the people can digest with us. So it is 1990, simpler time in Derry, Maine, when little Laurie Ann Winterberger is riding her big wheel as the storm rolls in and encounters what has to be probably one of the, you know, most culturally ingrained images of a clown that we will see before she's horribly murdered off screen. Now, that's a way to start a TV series. Like, let's be real. This was a TV miniseries, and in the first 10 minutes, a child has been horribly mutilated and murdered. It's like, okay.
Off screen,
but I think that's the power. That's the power of this one, especially for the people that saw it young, because it's left to your imagination as to what actually happened. We'll talk more about that.
Two looks.
Yeah.
Two looks from Tim Curry. Hi.
Yeah.
You knew right then what was happening. Yeah.
Exactly. He's, and that's the start of the Tim Curry-ness of it all. I mean, this movie lives and dies by Tim Curry. I can't imagine anyone else being able to, in, you know, two really quick snapshots, being able to go, oh, fun clown. Oh, terrifying clown. Mm-hmm.
That's what's so horrifying about this character is I can't separate him. I cannot separate Pennywise from Tim Curry. And I think that's what horrifies me so much about it is what I can separate from in the new one. I can separate the characters. Yep. Can't do it with this man. I can't.
But I think, I think it's because of the time when we saw it, back right? then,
and it worked. And it works so well with Tim's face, though. Like, he looks frightening.
Tim Curry
that just plain blocked out face with the red nose.
Well, and Tim Curry is just so dynamic and charismatic. That man could do it without makeup.
Yeah.
Like, he could do it with no makeup on and still be terrifying, honestly, I think.
So we are introduced to one of our protagonists, Mike, who is the town librarian. Who has a little showdown with the police chief about the fact that six kids have been, you know, are missing or murdered, which heavily reflects the past when Mike discovers a photo that couldn't and shouldn't have been at the crime scene. The photo of one George Denbrough, who died in 1960. Now, this is where we start to jump through time, and as we are introduced to our characters as their adult selves and their childhood selves, it's tricky. It's going to be tricky to keep up with, but what we'll do to talk now is to talk about our past as their two separate selves. So we do meet the adults first, but I want to talk about the kids first. So here is our child cast.
Oh, Jonathan Brandis.
Yeah, RIP Jonathan Brandis. I think he is one of the standouts.
Crush on him.
One of the stands out of this cast. But this kid cast is damn strong. Like a damn strong child cast, especially for a TV movie, which is not, you know, necessarily, you know, known for their acting skills. Every one of those kids delivers, and I think that it would be a weaker film without them. Do we have a favorite out of the kids?
I mean, I just...
Well, Katie just said...
Yeah, I say Katie Brandis. Just said it.
But probably, I think with Jonathan Green. Brandis, I think he was one of the stronger performers out of the child cast, but no one did a bad job. They were all really good.
Yeah.
Which, Seth Green yeah. played the perfect clown.
Yeah, I think Seth Green just has this knack of, you know, jumping in these little cultural moments and you're like, oh, Seth Green. He just, like, he is a genre kid that just keeps popping up. You're like, he does seem, like, watching it back this time, you're like, oh, he's a little bit older than the rest of these kids. Like, you can't help but notice that he's that little bit older, but that's okay.
I did forget Seth Green was in this, by the way.
Because you know, like until you see him and you're like, oh, that's oh, there he yeah. is. It's
pre-Buffy, pre-Austin Powers,
pre-everything. Post my stepmom's an alien though. She's like, he was delivering. This kid's had a career.
Pre-Airborne.
Yeah, he's been a busy boy. But I think as you guys said, Jonathan Brandis. I mean, like, what a pretty child he was. He was just like, he was meant to be a movie star, that kid. Like, the camera loves him, but he can act his little patootie off. Because the first thing we see after an adult one is, you know, the scene with him and Georgie. And that's not a long scene, but it's a poignant scene because even though we know something's going to happen, there's a little bit of tension there. And even the way he says, be careful, to his little brother, I was like, oh, that's really tragic and sad. But why are you such a good actor? I don't know. I can't deal with it.
Don't float your paper boat down the stream, George.
Oh, it's not okay.
You just knew that was going to be your last words.
Yeah. That's heavily implied in the book. Like, well, not heavily implied. They talk about it in the book. But it's just all the more tragic. You're like, oh, that's really sad. Okay, cool. And the little kid that played Georgie, he's cute. Like, what a kid to sacrifice to a horrid drain monster. That little kid, that poor little boy playing with his boat, you know, and then
little Drake Bell, let's sacrifice him to the monster.
It's like, yeah, well, anyway.
You notice in the remake that Georgie was super cute too.
Yeah, well, I think that you gotta sacrifice the cutest kid to the first. But let's talk about Pennywise popping out of that drain. Yeah, hello.
Do you have an image of that one, Steve?
No.
I don't, because I want people to use their brains, because I think a big part of this movie is the suspension of disbelief and the difference between your childhood experience in the world and your adult experience in the world. And that's really, I think, poignant here for a certain age group of people that can relate to the way that these kids lived, because they had to change it in that update. I don't think the new movies would have been as popular if it was still the 60s and the 90s as opposed to the 80s and the 2000s, because kids, one of the big conversations that we've had is a lot of people won't watch older movies because they're old. Because they're old. Boring. Not related.
I mean...
Yeah. Too Kenny, much character wait, development. You, slow burns.
You kind of talked me into this along with my son. Like, we're in this
you're
together.
Welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome.
You, I mean, trauma bonding. Remember this. So when he pops up, like, does it still kind of make you go, ugh?
Yeah, like, there was a little bit of pee came out. Just a little bit.
Like,
first when the movie starts and you hear that, bam, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Like, that's when my heart sank. And then, hiya, Georgie.
Yeah.
God, I hate it so much. Like, I hate it so much that I love it. I still hate it so much.
I took a deep breath when it happened. I was like, oh, here we go.
It just bothers me so freaking much still.
Like, they float.
They float, Georgie.
You'll float too.
Come on, you're down here with me. You'll float too. And not look
powerful.
As an adult,
stuff.
As an adult, not terrifying, right? Looking at it, you go, okay, it's a shot of the guy. It's a shot of the guy with teeth makeup. We don't see anything happen to Georgie.
No, it's still bad.
But I still remember my childhood self going, oh my fucking God, what's that? Like, going,
maybe it's the trauma, maybe it's like the extra element that I'm a mom now, but then I'm just like, oh God, Georgie. Like, I think it bothered me even more now because, like, I'm just like, oh God, poor Georgie. Like, and now I'm thinking, like, oh God, it's mother, it's poor mother. Like, I'm just like,
I think that's the point, Katie. When what I was saying before is, and we had this conversation with Jeff the other day on a live show, we are probably the last generation that went out in the morning. Parents didn't know where we were. And then we came home when the streetlights came up. You know, that's very much, this is the core of that. This is like 1960s, like,
yeah.
kids having like latchkey kids, like living their lives, having whole separate lives from their parents. And the I don't think kids could relate to that.
The cool spots around town. They didn't know about the culvert. They didn't know about the woods. They didn't know about all these spots. My kids.
They didn't know about the clown in the drain.
They didn't know about that old man. They used to give me candy for money. They didn't know about him.
But isn't that the point? I think that's the point, is that, you know, as children, you have, especially with children, friend group, like a really tight friend group like this, you have that kind of code of honor that you keep things secret, that, you know, what your secret hideout, your, you know, like if someone tells you a secret, like that's the power and the strength of childhood. And that's a big, big motif in the book about, you know, the power of imagination, the power of childhood. But I can relate to this. I remember disappearing, like going away. We're going to go build a fort in the bush all day. No worries. Yeah, cool. We'll come back and get some food and then we'll go back again. But as soon as the streetlights came on, it was time to go home. Like, fuck, I'm going to get in trouble. Got to go. Whereas
I know
today's
that we,
kids
I used to rustle up all the kids in the neighborhood. Go down, there was an old ferry at the lagoon nearby that was like beach. So that was our clubhouse. And to be initiated, we had to go through the park that was there where the, like all the zoo animals and that, and there were these vines that you could swing on, but you weren't allowed to because, you know, you'd get hurt. So the park rangers would chase you. So that was your initiation, was to get chased by the park rangers and get away and not let your parents find out. And one chick got caught, ratted us all out. She never got to join the club.
I was going to make a joke about disappearing in the outback, but hey, you know what?
But this is, I think kids of a certain age, well, adult children of a certain age can relate to that. Like, we all had those experiences, whereas you couldn't let your kids do that today. Like, imagine the, like Katie just said, imagine the anxiety of going, where's my child? Is my child having its arm ripped off by a horror drain monster?
Yeah, it's getting to the point now that I'm having my own mother guilt me about my 9-year-old not having a cell phone when I was firmly standing like, he's not having a cell phone until he's 16, just like I did. But no, it's getting to the point where I'm like, I kind of have to do it now. Apparently, if you're going to drop him off and leave him there, you got to give him a cell phone in case something happens. Apparently, you can't just leave him somewhere without a way of communicating anymore.
No.
Yeah. And if there's like old man selling him candy, he needs to have mum on the line so you can like help him barter and transfer him the cash.
Well, apparently there are killer clowns in the sewer drains, and then there are men in masks with black balloons that put them in basements and all that. Like,
but see, when we reviewed the black phone, I said it gave me strong It vibes because it's the same thing. Back in the day, you could disappear. Kids could and did disappear for the day and then return. That's the big, like, there's the whole, it's 8 p.m. Do you know where your children are? Like, there's a reason why this formula works.
And then I said, I want to play Naughty Boy with Ethan Hawke, but that's neither here nor there.
That's neither here nor there. So we meet childhood Billy, but we also meet adult Billy. So here's our adult.
Why are you doing that to me? Come on.
Here's our adult cast. Now,
Agent Curry. Hi.
I love Agent Curry. Just taking any chance. Any chance.
Oh, R.I.P. John Ritter.
Look at the 90s. The 90s-ness of this. It's just so...
You could not have any movie without John Ritter in the 90s.
Who was playing the lady? This... Who was...
Beard.
Beverly, who played Beverly.
Yeah, Beverly?
Come on, Stevie, you know this. Her name is Annette O'Toole.
Don't get him started, yeah.
She played Martha Kent on Smallville.
Superman's mom.
She was Superman's mom. She was very prolific in the 80s and 90s. But, John Boy Walton. Like... An American, you know, staple as Bill. I think the start. What do we think about the start? I think I think they both managed the stutter pretty well. It could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. We've seen some very diabolical performances in our horror time together. But I think it's quite cute. I think they did well. I think that they're a good match for each other. We then you're gonna have to help me because I didn't take notes of chronology as to when we meet people. Who do we meet next? Yes, we do that. Do we meet Ben?
I think
next?
It's John Ritter next, right? Ben, yeah.
Yeah, Ben. Yeah. Ben Hanscom. Now,
the stories get shorter and shorter as we meet them.
Yeah,
as of their
Ben seems to be really long. It's like, for some reason, it's like, okay, the kid that played Ben has a fair amount of time as well, but he's...
Well, they had to let him get through his lines that he had to stutter.
No, we're talking Ben now. We're moving on to Haystack.
Oh, sorry.
The fat kid who's not really that fat, but that's okay. It was the 90s and the 60s.
He was 90s fat.
There was different fat. Okay, it was pH fat. But this is where we also meet our bully. What do you guys think of Henry Bowers?
Great bully.
great bully with, you know, disposable cronies that don't really have any kind of personality, like in the real world.
But I'm going to say, very 90s right. bully, though. Like, he did, I guess, for the time, like, it was done.
60s bully, exactly. He was a greaser.
Yeah, but, like, filmed in the 90s. It was very much, he met expectations.
But a great portrayal as well.
I had a fourth grade bully he was a cowboy, but it was close enough to the greaser stance that it's like, oh no, he's gonna cut me in the belly. I know it.
But this and that's another really good segue, because that idea of violence between children is not something that we really talk about either. I distinctly remember being scared of some older kids and not knowing what they were going to do. You know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Like, kids are violent as heck. I remember catching the bus home because we wanted to. We would always get picked up. My brother and I decided we were going to ride the bus with our friends and catch the bus home. And we would have to catch it with the high schooler kids from the private school. So they were mean. And I remember one day they threw us from the moving bus as it was turning a corner. It was my friend Kathy, myself, and my brother just rolling across the grass, and the bus kept going. It was like, oh well, we got thrown from a moving vehicle and no one cared. So we beat those
explains
kids up
a lot.
Next time we got on there. Oh yeah, there's a lot of head trauma here too.
Explains a lot.
We beat the crap out of those teenagers the next time we caught that bus. We weren't even waiting for them to say anything. We just walked up. I think my friend Kathy started the first blow. She just hit him over there with the textbook, and it was on.
There you go. See? Childhood violence. Again, something we don't talk about and something that's not really reflected a lot in media, but this idea that, you know, you have to defend your own and you have to defend yourself. I think we're so tied up in the idea that, you know, very much the Simpsons. Won't somebody please think of the children? Like, they have to be protected at all costs. But kids used to be able to protect themselves. Like, you had to.
Clearly, no one even cared. The bus driver's like, meh, one less stop.
Either learn how to run or you learn how to fight, right? Like, that's how it goes. One of the two. But Ben is the new kid in town. He is, as I said, the token fat kid. And the token romantic amongst the group, because he falls in love with one Beverly Marsh.
Beverly Marsh was my favorite character.
I think she was quite complex, and I really enjoyed her.
There's a lot going on with Beverly. And
they
enjoyed
her at one point.
Yes, in the book, they definitely all enjoyed
it. They sure
her.
Did.
But I think he gets a little bit of short shrift in the TV movie, but I think Beverly is better serviced in the movies. I think she's given...
She sure is.
The theatrical movie. I think she's But no, the reality of that character, you know, like they couldn't do certain things on a TV movie in the 90s that you could do, you know.
They can murder the kid, but they can't have the other adult concept.
The Epstein.
But as much as look, as much as we're joking about it, we all went to school with kids that, you know, didn't have the best home life, that you know, went through certain things, and the way that it manifests itself in this movie is interesting, and other like in the theatrical movies is probably more reality based. But
I think her storyline was definitely better played out in the newer movies than it was in the 90s film. I agree with you there. Sorry, all seriousness.
But I do think Annette O'Toole gives us, when she gets her phone call, because the most important thing that we've glossed over is they don't remember what's happened in Derry until Mike reaches out to remind them. Then everything comes flooding back. They have their flashbacks.
So why do they have this amnesia? Is it explained?
It's because they're not there. They've moved away. They're not living in the town. They're not constantly exposed to whatever evil exists in Derry, which is going to be obviously
Nightmare Before Christmas or Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah,
you gotta be scared.
But I think that's obviously with the TV series Welcome to Derry, which is why we're kind of doing this, because we're hoping that by the end of this we'll have some more official news. It's filming. They're doing it now. It's going to explore more of the town's history, which we don't get in this these adaptions. Mm-hmm. We get it a little bit in the movie, in the theatrical movie, but there are so many other stories in the Stephen King book that show that Pennywise is just a symptom of the evil that exists in that town. He pops up, but he's not the only face of evil.
So is Gary kind of like Sunnydale in Buffy? It's like there's some evil presence there, yeah.
Something, well, it's a bigger story. It's a big, big story in the book. If you haven't read it, it's like universes and like the nature of evil, the nature of good, and the nature of humankind and how evil portrays itself. It's a big story, so I think that, you know, a TV series will work and as a prequel to the movie, so we will see. But we get these little vignettes of their childhood experiences. Now, Ben's father was a pilot who got shot down in Korea?
Yeah.
Korea? Yep. Korea. And he sees him. Like, that's, I think, horrible for a child. Yeah, like, and I love that he gradual.
Barely remembered him, yeah.
Yeah, that gradual transformation into Pennywise. It's his dad, and then all of a sudden, his dad has these big, like, pom-poms on him. Then dad's holding a balloon. It's just like, oh, that is not okay. That's like,
yeah.
The idea that evil can get inside them as well and twist their memories of people they love and stuff is scary as a child, even as an adult, to think that, you know, something can play with your mind and play with your memories that much. But we've also, this is where like every story kind of starts to fall in, because we meet childhood versions of adult characters. We meet, as we said, Beverly, whose dad is the janitor. So some people have no class. Some people have janitors for parents. It's like, oh, those girls in the back of the head as they walk away. Bro. I know, little bitches. But Beverly is the janitor's daughter. She is physically abused in this.
He worries a lot.
He worries a lot. But then they imply it a bit more in the second half that, you know, there's something else going on. But, you know, and saying it without saying it, because, you know, it was the 90s. But I think that the childhood actress and the adult actress for Beverly did brilliantly. I do love it when she, like, loses her shit as an adult. And she's like, you come near me again, I will kill you. I will kill you. I'm like, oh, bitch! I wouldn't fuck with her. Like, Jesus Christ, Beverly, calm down. Power suit.
I'm a little
wasn't long, too. Less than 20 minutes after the throes of passion, too. So
yeah.
It's a little partial to Ms. Chastain, but you know, whatever.
But for this Beverly, I think she's well suited.
She's well suited.
I do have a soft spot for Eddie. Poor Eddie Kasprak, who just can't win.
I hate it when you stutter my name, Bill.
What a cute little kid. Like, let's look at him again. Look at that. It's like, oh, no. Oh. He's like a little straight talking gangster. He's like, don't do that. He don't like it when you do that. It's just like, oh. I
always feel safe with him around.
I know. And like, Eddie's, we're supposed to have that little. Oh, he's like the cub of the group, I think. We're supposed to protect the runt of the litter, and I think Eddie's very much that runt of the litter kid. Oh, his mother, though. The adult Eddie's mother. Eddie, you're scaring me! It's just like, oh, she's got that pitch that makes me go, oh. So Eddie's an interesting character. In this film, I think there's a lot not said about Eddie that, again, is implied that we should read between the lines a little bit about Eddie's adult life,
which was his limo driver.
Him and his limo driving
guy.
Yeah, and, you know, no wife, no girlfriend, et cetera, in the 90s.
Really boy. Can I explore that in the book or nah?
Yep. There's a lot more. Like, you've got to think.
See, I feel like I need to read the book.
500 plus pages. Everything
makes sense.
Yeah, it's a long read, but it's a good read. But
I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and most of them are around like 20 hours. This one was 40.
Yeah, she's a long one.
It's a big book.
The second time I went through it was an audiobook. I was like, I don't think I can physically do it again. So I was just like, I'll pop it in and just listen to my heart's content.
That's two full days of our life.
I know, but you don't listen to it all at once. You just do it in bits and pieces.
I sit on a bulldozer for 12 hours at a time, so.
Yeah, he's got to be entertained. No problem
for me. Knocked it out.
So we have this little gang forming. Now, I don't know, did you guys have, when you were growing up, an area like the Barrens where you would hang it? I mean, obviously, Luke had a fair. That's pretty cool. Like a crash ferry.
Decommissioned ferry.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's very cool.
We had a bush. We had like the bush behind my friend's house that we would like make a little shelter cubby house kind of thing. That's what we had. I didn't have a
ferry. We had woods, which I guess is basically the same as the Australian bush.
Well, we had all the woods as well because we were like where the ferry was part of the gardens, which is like a zoo as well. So there's like all wildlife, like plant life.
Wow. And then
the ferry that was decommissioned. There's now new ferries running now that the lagoon is full again, because this was also during the drought of 1990, if you remember, Steve. Or 91, after the floods and all the water receded and there was no more. It was weird. But yeah, so that's what happened. I think that's why the ferry was decommissioned, actually, because the floods had like smashed it into stuff and it was had it.
There you go. Katie,
need a ferry if you don't have water.
Get amongst it and have a secret kids like place or?
Sorry, my cat's desperate for attention. Everyone's like, hi, Loki.
Hi, Loki. Katie's pussy is at it again. So, did you have a kids hideout or were you a good girl?
I don't think we had anything like that, like for younger kids, but you know, for us delinquents, for teenagers, we had the quarry.
That's quarry. A different kind of hangout. It's a different kind of hangout, isn't it? But I can relate to this whole, you know, let's do a project. Today we're going to, you know, build this, or today we're going to do that. And you would lose an entire day on this, like, all right, you go get this from your house, I'll get this from my house, we'll find this, we'll build this, we'll do this. Like, I don't think kids do that anymore, right?
No.
But then kids probably don't like, I used to do weird stuff too, like, oh, let's make the atmosphere / nightmare board game in the actual lounge room with actual tile pieces, and we'll just walk around as they're moving playing pieces.
I built, you know. Me and my brother built a functioning for a hot minute until we got in big trouble, like little like lazy river thing in the back garden, because then we had all these tiles left over from when we were renovating the kitchen. So we dug it up and put the tiles underneath so the water would sit in there and put That's the hose awesome. In there and everything flowed around.
Oh, you got flogged for that.
Big trouble.
Yeah, you got plugged.
No.
We also, we would roll. So we would make our own like carnival. And I remember we had the guinea pig cage, which was like big solid wood thing that my stepfather had built. And it was solid and good and nice. And it was chicken mesh that was like keep the guinea pigs in. We would climb into this guinea pig cage with foam mattresses, roll them around ourselves, and then get someone to roll us down a cliff face in the fucking guinea pig.
Yeah.
They're drawing, I don't know what game they were playing earlier. My son had some friends over, but they were drawing penises in some sort of game they were playing earlier. Penises and poops.
It's called being a boy.
Any game you play that if it has a pen and paper, you're going to draw penises.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And that's exactly what they said, too. We're boys. What you expect? I'm like,
I have to ask a serious movie.
Did I say anything? I expected this.
A serious movie-based question. Whose bathroom scene is more intense, Eddie's or Beverly's?
Beverly's.
Eddie's.
I think it's really upsetting that Phil and Lil DeVille are down in the drain in Beverly's from Rugrats.
Oh god!
Yeah, but wasn't Phil there and like, Lil? It wasn't there like her dad, blood around her bathroom and stuff? You know,
yeah, her dad Beverly's. Not noticing the blood was scary, but didn't that already happen to Bill? So
it happened to Bill when
it was. It was to be expected. Yeah. But Eddie's, it was just like his like. What happened to him was probably worse than what happened to anyone else.
Because
kids go in their personal Eddie's happened experiences.
In public? Like, Eddie's happened
in public. At he was school. Naked. Like,
he was
saw the clown.
Yeah.
Shit was changing. There was stuff that could physically hurt him. You know, that hot water was probably hot.
Yeah, Eddie.
I think his was probably the most traumatic.
Mm-hmm. Right? I think the blood thing is really cool as well. I think, you know, that whole the adults can't see it because they don't believe is really cool. Like the blood thing was really cool, and like especially when Beverly's father touches her face and she's like that kid. She earns her stripes in that scene. She's like. Traumed like no one's business, like as you would be when there's blood everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that her scene makes me feel probably more sorry for her because she's already in a horrible situation and now she's even
she doesn't need worse like blood situation. And shit everywhere.
Like it's only she can see, like that's psychological trauma. Yeah, the spider, and she has to clean it up. Like she has to clean it up because she's the only one that can see it. Like it's almost Macbethian that what happens to her. It's like, let's.
Would it have attracted flies if she wouldn't have cleaned it up?
I don't know. Who knows? Like that's part of the drama of it all. But the interesting one. I do like everything is so like personal and you know visceral until. We get to come on, Steve, you can do it. Richie's, because Richie's encounter with it is very different to everyone else's, because Richie's the big showman. Yeah, he's the joke, he's the wisecracker. He's very much media based, I would guess. So for him to be frightened of the Wolfman and have the Wolfman alive in the basement. Was an interesting twist because everything else had been so personal. Like Eddie didn't want to shower with the other kids, so that's where it attacked him.
Mm-hmm.
Beverly got attacked in her home. So did Billy. Like it's just interesting that you know that's where that happened for him.
who had that old theory about if there's a gun in the first scene, it's going to be used in the second scene?
It's very, if the gun doesn't go off, yeah, if the gun doesn't go off, it's a bad movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So like them seeing the werewolf movie in the theaters, they had to use that somewhere.
I just think it's interesting that's his fear. You know what I mean? That's the thing that scares him the most.
His imagination, like he's always so fascinated by film and media. And,
yeah, it's an interesting difference because we don't see for the last two, we don't see Mike's because Mike's in the movie, in the book is an epic scene. What Mike sees and the Mike's encounter is very intense. Like there's burning people and crows attacking him and all this kind of stuff. Like it, and that's
what actually happened. It's just like he's actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's intense and it's a long part of the book too.
They couldn't show that in the movie.
They definitely couldn't show that. But they do show bits and pieces.
The regional one they showed here.
Yeah. Yeah, not down the other way, Kenny. Oh dear, that could be a worry. And we don't see Stans, and I think that that's really important that we don't see what terrified Stan, because Stan is, I guess, Stan is the more adult of all of them. They're mature kids, but he's more in that adult world because he's all about responsibility. Like he wants to be an ornithologist. He likes order. He's kind of edging out of that childhood world where the rest of them are all firmly entrenched, even though they have, very adult things happening to them. He seems to be on the outside, especially in this one, he seems to be on the outside. We don't get a lot of Stan, which I think is interesting. We don't get a lot of Mike either, but it's a weird encounter that we don't get a lot of. It's explored more in the second movie, but we have the last member of the group, Mike Edlin, who is the town's librarian who we met at the beginning. And Mike is
something's terribly wrong.
Yeah, terribly wrong in Derry. Terribly. I noticed that too, actually. So this war of the children kind of culminates in an epic rock fight, and it is an epic rock fight in the book as well. This is a big turning point for this group of kids and against Henry Bowers, where they actually stand up for themselves as a group, and they win. They win for the first time. They like actually have a big win, but this is where Henry gets, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you all. Like
I blame Richie for that in the theater. Poured the coke right on him.
Right, exactly.
Upon rewatching that, I said, Richie, you little scoundrel.
You little bastard.
They were mad at Ben, but they let Bill and they let Eddie go until they were in the theaters. And he was just like, hey boys, guess what? Soda pop all over your sweet leather jackets. I'd have kicked their ass too. I'm not mad at him.
I would kick their ass. But this rock fight, they all managed to, I think they have every intention of killing Mike. Like they were gonna harm Ben, but there's a hard N word in there. There's a hard N word in there.
It's the 60s, baby. Yeah.
You gotta have a hard N word, and I have I reckon they would have killed that kid. He was lucky enough to get away, and the rest of the guys, the losers club, God love them, they saved him, they saved each other against the threat of Henry Bowers, only to realize that there is a bigger threat looming for all of them, and they hadn't been able to share that until this point either. They didn't want to believe what had happened, what was happening to them in their individual lives was really happening until, we look into that history book. And even though this is an old, old movie, that's one of my favorite scenes, watching that photo come to life.
Oh, of him in the village and...
Yep, and him backflipping through. And it's like...
The dancing clown. That's where you really...
Pennywise the dancing clown.
Pennywise the dancing clown.
I like that scene too, even though I'm,
it's cool.
I'm horrified.
But see, I always, so my sister had this like hot air balloon that would suspend from the ceiling with a China clown in it that looked exactly like Tim Curry's It. And this scene, I would dream about it and I would wake up, and because we were all on like a sleep out, so I could see the clown from my room. And I'm like, oh my God, like that thing is going to come alive. I don't know why ever my mother would have got that for her, because it looked terrifying, even if you didn't have the It connotations. It was just not nice.
You know, it was funny. I don't remember. It might have been a year or two ago. I came out for work one day. I get to my car, and I don't remember why I turned around, but I turned around and there was a red balloon at the store.
Of course there was. Someone's fucking with you.
No, no one was. That's the funny thing. No one was.
Did you go and investigate?
No, Katie went.
No, I did actually. I walked
over. If I land to the Florida, red balloons, then I'm scared. If there's 99 red balloons, I'm good to
honestly
go.
Thought someone was messing with me, and I thought, it's not my birthday. It's not Halloween. It's not April Fool's.
Did you start playing 99 love balloons?
Like, what's the occasion for someone to be messing with me? I ran through my head, like, what is the occasion for someone to be messing with me on this?
And some
I think someone just like had a birthday party and the balloon like blew away, and it was just so funny. Just think like that it just blew away and landed on the sewer. Just like, what is my life with this? And just, yeah.
But this is where Pennywise steps forward and reveals his plan. I'm going to kill you all. I'll drive you crazy first, but I'm going to kill you all.
And you have like, Pennywise.
Mean
that's
player.
That's almost worse. I'm going to drive you crazy first, because I think like we come up on the same on the scene on the where he says, "Go ahead, let go, be afraid. You all taste so much better when you're afraid." Like the idea that that thing not only gets off on you being totally terrified, but will then like devour you because of it is something. It's so perverse. It's just like
he knows exactly how to make you terrified,
and he does. And that's the
right
thing.
Things to all what's, the right buttons to press.
What's worse, dying or being driven crazy and then killed? Like I think I can't think of. Like because that psychological warfare is gonna happen. They can't get help. This is when they realize that torture. They need to take matters into their own hands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They realize
what are those things, Boggart and Harry Potter? If those things were deadly, yeah. Just come out the wardrobe.
What's worse, a killer clown or a transphobe author? What's worse?
Little from column A, little from column B.
Same thing, right?
So this is where they decide that they have to take the fight to it. This is, you know, this is where they go, all right, if we're not going to go down without a literal fight, you know, they do their training. I love it. They do their training with the slingshot. They're ready to go. They know that they have to go. If they're going into this sewer, they can't come out unless the job is done. And so they do. And that's, like this, even though it's a TV movie set, it's pretty like cool. Like going down into that hole,
getting the earrings. You know, it's got to be silver. Yeah. They're putting so much belief into this.
Everything that they believe, everything they've seen, everything that they've experienced is going to come into defeating this monster.
If you believe in it and you work hard enough,
yeah,
you can achieve it.
Just now, manifest your childhood trauma.
Henry and his group of goons see their opportunity and follow them into the sewer. This is where shit gets like real loose as Stan gets separated from the pack, and essentially he was going to get checked out by Henry. Someone wasn't coming out of this sewer. Let's be honest. It's out of this group, someone wasn't coming out of the sewer, and that moment where the deadlights or whatever it is when it's not manifested as a clown comes up the tube and sucks Belch in and starts to, I never noticed it until like the other night, literally starts to eat him. You can hear it on the soundtrack. It's like chewing and wet and like.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Yeah.
Oh, if you go back and watch it, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then we get the famous bright white hair scene when Henry Bowers sees the deadlights. His hair turns from black into bright white. Couldn't quite explain it. That's why that song always used to scare me, because I used to think of it.
Henry Bowers,
you know. It was a creepy video anyway. But the kids manage to reunite and they experience it in its full, I guess, you know, terrifying nature. It appears to them as Beverly's dad, as Georgie. It goes for all of their weak spots. And I think it's interesting, again, that it manages to get Stan. Stan's the weak link. He manages to be the one that is the most afraid of it, because he was the one that didn't believe in it enough to start with. And he's the one that gets separated from the group. He's the one that, you know, Pennywise is going to eat in front of them to scare the rest of them. So, poor Stan. Poor Stan.
Not that strong.
Yeah. And this is, we get two really awesome moments. We get, this is battery acid, you slime.
Oh, that's cool. Got such good makeup, man. There's effects.
I mean, I was about to say, as much as we, you know, sometimes look at practical effects from some movies and go, oh my God, there's something cool about a melting clown face that you're not going to get in CGI, really.
There's nothing cool about a melting clown face.
You don't want the clown's face to melt, Katie? That means victory. Victory for you guys. And Beverly
had checked her out well and truly before this point.
Beverly gets her shot. That
skeleton puppet come out.
Beverly gets her shot.
Take the
shot. Aim is true. Kill it, Bev, kill it. And she manages to shoot it, and it disappears down the drain. Now, in true leadership style, Bill's not going to let it go. He grabs that hand. Like, I can't say that I would do that. If this was happening to me, Bill wants that thing dead. He wants to, you know, walk around with it dead.
If we've already gone to this point, you want to put
I'd be scared
away.
That it was going to rip my fucking arm off. Like, it did it to my brother.
He's thinking about Georgie, though. He's thinking about Georgie. He wants to rip its fucking arm off.
I know. It's just like, and then it turns into that weird thing.
Yeah, Steve, why don't you care about Georgie?
I do care about Georgie. I just think my self-preservation instinct would kick in and be like, that's a tiny hole. It's a monster. I don't like the physics of the situation.
I like to see in the hole first.
But they managed to come out relatively unscathed. And mentally, I don't think so, but they managed to come out.
No big thing.
They come out, and Bill makes them promise that if it isn't dead, that they'll all come back to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Assembly Avengers again.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
Yeah, we'll just take a hit of this battery acid, and we'll just come back and finish the job.
So, as each and every member of the Losers Club is called back to Derry, the last adult member of the group we find is Stan. Now, as we said, Stan is the kid that couldn't/wouldn't see it. And you know, was the last, and there's a big thing made about it in this adaption, and even in the book, that Stan was the last one to see it, because he was, you know, the oldest, the more mature of the group. He was the last child to see this monster.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that whatever happened to Stan in this book, in this adaption, and you know, the fear of the situation down in the sewer, ultimately made him realize that he couldn't go back. And this is a pretty intense scene, again, for a TV movie in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Stan Stan takes himself out in the bathtub with a razor blade before writing it on the wall in blood. Now, I have a question for you guys. Do you think Stan saw it and that's why? Or is it the memory?
Well, it likes bathrooms. Memory. So...
No, it's the memory. It's the trauma.
Memory.
But we don't. But we also don't see. We also don't see him do it.
Many a times, I've ran a warm bath and looked for the razor blades. Couldn't find them. But if I'd have had that memory to spark, I'd have looked a little bit
Kenny,
harder.
Is this a cry for help?
Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Well.
I think it's interesting that we see, again, what we don't see about Stan's encounter is reflected in his adult life as well. Like, everyone else is having these flashbacks, and we see the way that they deal with it. Stan's way to deal with it is to take himself out, but as we're going to see in the second part, these adult characters start to be able to see it again. Because Stan's experience was so different, did he encounter it as an adult in that bathroom? It's something we're never going to know, but it's an interesting way to think about it.
Do we know in the book?
Well, the book differs slightly, so yeah, I'm not going to spoil the book.
I don't think he was getting ready to take a bath before he got that phone call.
Yeah.
So the whole reason, I think he was getting in the tub. Once he got that phone call and the memories came over him, he was getting in the bath with the intention to not get back out of that bath.
Well, think about the remake. When he got the call, he was planning a vacation with his wife. So it's totally different.
Well, this is the really interesting thing about this one is they were talking about having children. The last conversation he has with his wife in this adaptation is they were talking about having children. That phone call happens. He remembers his childhood trauma and then takes himself out. That's some deep shit, yo. that's some deep ass shit.
I'm going to say this for everyone. Children are traumatic. Sorry, Grayson.
Look, the rest, y'all are parents, so I believe you.
That guy was pretty big at the time, wasn't he? The guy that played Stan?
And I think that's the Drew Barrymore casting of it all. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's having these prominent 80s, 90s actors in these adult parts. You think they're going to be there and part of the cast. But to have him, you know, tap out is very interesting. That's where we end our first installment of the It story. Now, we should give it what? Out of 5, 7 little boy arms holding paper boats. Luke, how are you going
to
go?
What a horrible image to conjure. Look, for let's be real, it was something of its time. It was a TV movie, but it was so well cast, and the story is really good. So even though it's changed for TV, there's omissions that we've all touched on. I still would give it probably 4 arms out of 5. And I prefer the kids' part more so than the later, if I can say that. You're muted.
Do you think it's because it's a little bit more, I don't know, there's, and the idea of magic existing in the book is very prevalent in the book. Do you think that's because there was more opportunity in the childhood part, like, or it's just the actors' performances, that we got to see them together as much, I think might be part of it as well.
Well, I just think, yeah, there was something that's a little bit more vibrant, I think. Maybe I like the throwback to the 60s. It felt different too. They've obviously shot these in 2 separate units, and you can definitely feel the change. It's not a bad thing, but I just preferred the younger cast more.
All right, Katie.
I decline.
You have to. You're on the panel. You got to do it. You got to rate it.
I decline.
You've got it.
Katie, I'm going to put you on Georgie's face in the opening credits if you don't answer.
I'm traumatized. I decline.
How many what, out of five? Well,
just give us a thought. Give us your thoughts on this first part.
This movie has fucked me up for the past how many years now. I'd still get viscerally upset watching this movie. I can't give a great rating because I get upset watching this movie.
The mark of good cinema though?
It
moves you in certain ways?
Maybe. I can't give a really great rating or a bad rating because here's my take, okay? I don't want to say it's bad because it's upsetting to me, but I don't want to say it's good because it's upsetting to me. So here's my take on it. I think that Tim Curry did such an amazing job playing this role of this entity that was so convincing that I cannot separate this man from this being. I think the kids were very committed to this role of these characters that were going through trauma themselves. I think the adults took on these roles of these humans that experienced such childhood trauma and just threw themselves into such a deep story, which, by the way, Stephen King wrote on coke. How do you write such a complicated story coked out of your mind?
It does make sense why it's so long. Why it's so long, though, doesn't it?
It makes sense why it's so long. It makes sense why it's so twisted. But Jesus Christ, Stephen King, how do you come up with this shit coked out? So, long story short, I don't think I could give an honest rating because I'm so messed up by this movie. So, if you want me to put a number on it, 3 out of 5, I guess. But I don't think it's fair because I hate this movie because I'm so traumatized by it. However.
So she's saying it's better than 3 out of 5.
I'm not saying it's better than 3 out of 5. I'm saying I don't think I can give a fair rating because I'm so scared of this movie. But I'm not saying it's good because I'm scared of it. I'm saying I don't think I can give it a fair shake because I'm so scared of it. But I'm saying the actors are amazing. Stephen King is amazing. Tim Curry was incredible. That's what I'm saying.
We'll touch base with you at the end of this experience. I want to examine that a bit more. The wonderful Mr. Kenny Legs, talk to me about your rating of this first installment.
Well, like I said, this movie, beside The Exorcist, probably affected me more than any other movie. And for that to be a TV movie to do that, phenomenal. I had no idea who Tim Curry was. I've always liked comedy as probably one of my highest things. So for someone to take a clown, which should be the height of comedy, and turn it into something that just scares the holy bejesus out of me, bravo, bravo. 10 ripped off arms out of 5.
Oh, Steve, you're muted again, love.
Getting a double bugger there from Kenny. That's lovely. But I think that I've got to agree. I do kind of agree with Kenny. I have strong visceral memories of seeing this the first time. But I can extract myself from that and go, okay, cool. Why, and that makes it interesting for me to examine the, you know, the why and the what for, because, you know, I was a film studies student. That's what we do. I think, as I said, the kid cast in this are so strong. They're so amazing. And if anything, I wanted more of them with Tim Curry. I think that the dynamic between all of them is so good. We're kind of just getting to meet this adult cast and we haven't seen them together yet. So it's hard to really judge at this point, you know, what's successful. I think because of how close, you know, generationally I was to the kids of that age, you obviously gravitate towards the kids and go, okay, I've had that, something like that experience. And it's like when you the first time you see something. So I remember the first Halloween movie I saw wasn't the original Halloween. It was Halloween 4, where Michael was after a child. that was close to my age. You know, like, I think it's same with Kenny. Like, the first real proper capital H horror movie I saw was The Exorcist when I was being babysat at my sister's house and she put it on at 3 a.m. and went to bed. She goes, watch this. Like, when you see something that you can put your childhood self into it and you see it, I think it definitely affects you more. And I have really strong affection for this movie. Obviously, there are weaker parts to it, and I think those weaker parts are to come, sadly. But there's some interesting directorial choices too, yes, and photography choices. But I can't really fault this. It's one of those ones that's near and dear to my heart, so it gets five little Georgie arms from me. Now, we are going to tackle this, as I said, in chunks, because we have literally done the first introduction and we're over an hour long. So we are going to tackle night two on a second part, as they say in Scream 2, the sequel discussion to be continued. So you never know, we might have a new face or two pop up in the next review, but we hope that you have enjoyed it. Talk to us about your favorite parts or the parts that have ingrained themselves in your brain from Stephen King's It 1990. And then we'll be back in Derry to find it all out again. Thank you for joining us, my lucky four. I was going to try and have seven people, but I was like, that's a lot of people on a review. So we'll lucky four.
Well over an hour.
Here we go. We're lucky seven. We'll be like, yeah, we are the Losers Club. So come be part of our club next time we talk about it. Until then,
beep, beep.
Stay away from the drains.